Okay. Test, test, 1, 2. Does it work? I'm not sure if I still know how to do it. No, it looks like it's working. Great. Oh yeah, let's do that. Everyone loves the snip. I'm going to keep everything. If it works, I'm going to keep everything in, as always.
The whole setup.
Yeah. If the human needs to intervene, the system is broken.
And yeah. As usual, we start with our laughter.
Yeah. No, like my whole the whole pipeline is still not done. I didn't touch anything for the last, I don't know, 2 months now or so. So I will still have to manually
click things.
Yeah.
Like the
curmudgeon I am. I have to manually call FFmpeg normalize.
Wow.
On the MP3 file.
Why don't you do it by hand?
Before
you open the file, the binary file in Vim.
Yeah. Zero
and you start changing things.
I mean, that's what I used to do with Audacity. Basically, it's like everything's terrible. No, but I just didn't sit down and vibe code to the last mile of the vibe line.
The
hard point
part
would be that the file that comes out of it goes through FFmpeg normalize and then uploads itself to Blossom and just drafts everything up and so on. Or just posts it out immediately, I don't know. But anyway, I got sidetracked by doing the podcaster thing, like the generating a podcast feed from
generating the RSS
Noster kind ones, basically abusing all that. And it turns out I still use it almost every day because I put a couple of npubs in, like all the people that post videos, you know, like Odell posts videos on Noster and Mahler's and some others and so on. And so I see it in my podcast feed and then I can just listen to the audio without having to open a Noster client. That's super useful to me. So anyway, it was good for something. But
it has users.
It has users. But enough about my adventures. What have you been doing the last 2 months?
The last 2 months I've been getting more and more confused.
Great. Very great start. We hate clarity.
Yes, what's the point?
Yeah, what's the point? It's just let like
it's very boring.
Just join the hallucination.
Yes.
Confuse yourself.
Yeah, no. I've been working more and more and more on this 10x system that I've been
working. You
posted
a thread about it.
I
remember that.
I posted a thread.
So it's published now officially.
Yes, and it has users.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. People that come in with pull requests and destroy stuff?
I had a couple of pull requests. I didn't merge any.
Smart. You're smarter than me.
you went too far into the YOLO.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, you should be... one should be very skeptical about merging pull requests of vibed stuff.
It will get better.
I was using today the... I was checking some stuff out on the Goose website. You know, it's Block. It's a big company. I can totally tell that website is vibe coded. Nothing was working. And I started thinking, the internet, it's annoying to use. It's going to get a lot more annoying.
Everything's going to get worse.
Everything is going to be broken.
So
you look beautiful, dark mode, light mode. But everything's going to be shit.
But you switched from... You used RuCode exclusively, right?
And now you added
Goose into the mix?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So the whole 10x thing kind of started evolving. I think 10x is no longer an accurate name. So the
2x more accurate?
No. It's like 1,000x is the goal.
Okay.
But it doesn't roll off the tongue as easily. So I'll stick with the name, but yeah.
So you think you're more productive with the system already?
I think I will be more productive. I am far less productive at the moment.
Okay.
So the whole idea... So yeah, I changed so many things that I'm probably... I should explain
maybe
a bit more.
Maybe sketch out what the basic idea is. Because I kind of know, but maybe I also don't.
Yeah, so the basic idea is... that it'll be a system that you use to create stuff. I mean, obviously, I am exclusively focused on software development. But I think the same concept can be used for any kind of other task. But I'm not even going to try to use it for that. But the whole idea is to leverage an agentic system that evolves over time. So the code snippets was kind of like the
first... So you teach the agents what to do.
I teach the agents, yeah. So
in the best case, they learn on their own.
Yeah, so the whole idea is that I will not ever look at the code. So what I see is that the LLMs are incredibly good at producing code at a brutal pace. So whenever I'm writing code manually, it's almost as if I'm wasting my time. It's so much slower, and it's almost wasting my time, right? So given that premise, the idea is then software development can no longer center around code itself. So what does it center around? And I think one of the pillars is the context, right? The LLMs, regardless of the models improving and becoming better and better and better, they will still have some, just because of physics, they will have some kind of context limitation, right? That's why we have specialists and generalists, right?
Yeah.
So what I want to manage is what goes into the models to execute on each individual task. And that's what the system should manage. So the way the approach evolved over time, so if you recall, I started with the code snippets thing, and I noticed that it was incredible improvement. The system would learn to go from something doesn't work to it works every single time. Yeah. Immediately.
And that's very, very much the same idea that Alex Gleason had, right? Like with the MK Stacks, he does a similar thing where he just has a repository of how to do stuff.
Yes, exactly. I actually, because I had not spoken with Gleason about any of this stuff. So we had a call, I think it was last week, where we kind of synced up. And I noticed that my approach and his approach diverge. So the goal is kind of the same. The approach is, I think it's polar opposites. He's centered on making... So do you know the difference? I didn't know. Do you know the difference that he has between Stacks and MK Stacks?
No.
So Stacks is literally just a project template, right? Like as we've had project templates for however long, where you go and buy like a $20 template and you get like a beautiful styling and shit like that, right? So Stacks is literally just that. It's just templates published as necessary events. So, okay. MK Stacks is one template. Oh, sorry. It's one template, which is the one that he is sharpening, right? So it is literally this one. I don't know, probably like, I think it's an XJS or a Byte app or whatever, with a bunch of rules of how to build apps within that framework, right? So his approach is build something, whatever, build like, try to one-shot, whatever, like a GitHub replacement or whatever it might be. Whenever it fails on executing in a single shot on what you want to build, go in and add more and more and more instructions into the mix to fix each marginal error that the system makes.
What does he use as like the underlying Nostr library, if any?
One he wrote, Nostrify, I think it's
called. Ah, okay.
Which is the one that he used for Ditto.
Yeah, okay.
So the way it, the approach that I have is that I want, so he's not doing multi-agent stuff.
Yeah,
his stuff is literally just a big long of list of mistakes you've made in the past, and I'm correcting each individual one. It's quite similar to the idea of the code snippets. You wrote this code wrong, this is the right code, never make that mistake again, and you fix, marginally you fix each individual error.
Yeah. And his thing is a command line tool, right?
So my what I'm thinking, and kind of the core tendency, the one that I told you before recording, is every single individual user interaction or user human intervention is a catastrophic mistake. Something happened that the system should have done well and it didn't do. So every time the user has to intervene, it's an opportunity to learn something.
It should only, like you should only intervene to kind of steer and give additional prompts, not to fix mistakes.
Not to fix mistakes, but also I think the LLMs can get, are already at the point we just don't have the tooling and the thinking around them. So here's an interesting exercise I did to test it. I gave Opus 4, the latest Anthropic model, I gave it the whole NIPS repo, and I told it, I coded it so that it would go and it would read every single PR and every single discussion on all the PRs. What's rejected? What's accepted? Why? And I told it to extrapolate the values of Noster from that.
Yeah.
The report that it wrote, it is fucking insane.
Yeah.
It went to the cypherpunk values, and it started speaking about how to think, not from an implementation perspective or anything like that, how to think about what is a good NIP and what is a bad NIP, what is a good protocol and a bad protocol. I actually asked it what NIPs don't fit in these values,
yeah.
And it pointed to the right NIPs. Like, it told me NIP 29 is kind of weird. NIP 29 is demanding from the relays that they change the way they behave. It's breaking this and this and this core. And what's fascinating is that it didn't pull just individual lines. It didn't source me, oh, okay, I got this line from here. It really extracted the value.
Got to the essence of it.
It got to the essence of it. So I think that is already possible, given enough context.
I mean, that's what the LLMs are good at. I mean, in some sense, you read all this as well, and you came to the same conclusions.
Yeah, exactly.
So there is a...
Over a long
there is
time.
Over a long, long time. And the LLM can just do it in, like, you know, a couple minutes, basically, in some sense.
Exactly. Exactly. It took like an hour.
It was
100 bucks.
Yeah.
It was insanely worth it.
But it's still cheaper than hiring someone that reads through everything for, you know,
how
1.5 years.
Very few people would go and read all that and arrive to those deep conclusions.
That's kind of the awesome thing about it, that, you know, very few people are so obsessive about this stuff, especially the niche stuff, like you are or some of the other Noster developers are.
Yeah.
And now you have like an obsessive nerd in your pocket for, you know, like a couple bucks, basically, that can get to the heart of any matter, as long as the corpus of information is large enough that the heart of the matter can be extracted in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so to me, what's interesting is that now that dude, that report, is an agent.
Yeah.
In my system.
Yeah.
It's not looking at code.
Yeah.
It's just understanding the broader picture of the values of the system.
Yeah.
And it can, and this is how 10x is evolving. The agents now, they are able to differentiate between what is a simple task, like fucking put, make this button look nice, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a simple task. And what is a more philosophical task?
Yeah, yeah.
So I wrote an agent, that is Verbeek.
Ah, Verbeek.
Yeah. Okay. So now they have discussions. My agents have discussions about the philosophy of what they're working on. And the interesting thing is that me as the human and any whitelisted pub key can participate in the discussion.
Yeah.
It's just Noster events.
That's why I was asking whether MKSX is... just a CLI, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because I think what's interesting about the stuff you're building out is that everything lives on Noster and you can interact on Noster directly. I think that's a super interesting approach where you have this multi-agent environment and they just all post to Noster basically. And if you have to intervene, you don't need to jump back into an IDE or like sit in front of the computer.
No, absolutely.
To go into a CLI or whatever. You just use whatever Noster client you have to reply to the things, and then stuff happens.
And stuff happens. And What I find fascinating, and the way I'm thinking about it, and I kind of arrived to this conclusion today after thinking for a long time, but what I've noticed is that there's a human, right? At the very top of the pyramid, of the hierarchy, there's a human. And the way we've been approaching, like if you go to Cursor or Rucode or anything like that, it's for the most part a very flat structure where the human comes in and says, work on this, building this, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way Rucode has it, which when I saw it, I was like fucking in awe. I was absolutely mind blown. Now I think that it's quite basic. Is it has by default this orchestrator mode that is directing the work, but it's just literally just delegating work.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, code must be written. Let's go into the coding agent.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a bug. Let's go into the debugging agent. You know, yes, it's good. It's useful, but it's quite limited. Actually, so the approach that I have now is that I have this is just a thesis, but the approach that I have now is that I'm going to have one of my agents be a human replica,
okay,
which is the name that I wrote on the diagram, a human replica, which will look at every single event that I write. Every single event, every single...
So you want to simulate yourself in some sense down the line?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I want this guy to learn to make me...
How you would intervene.
Yeah, what
you
would how do. I would yeah, intervene. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And what
or
I
also
noticed,
what your kind of taste is in some sense,
exactly,
and what your values are. Because
exactly,
that's what it boils down to with all this stuff.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
And how would you build it? How would you make this decision? Yeah.
And that's
I mean, I talked with Paul about this. I think it's basically it comes back to, you know, we have these role models that are like exemplars of humanity,
mm-hmm,
and that's where it's like, you know, what would Jesus do, kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's like, do you have these tricky situations? There is no right answer, so you ask yourself. I mean, Vervaeke talks about this all the time. That's why you basically try to have an internal dialogue with the sage. That's where like what would Jesus do comes from, and it all boils down to values. I mean, that's obviously in the, you know, moral domain and so on and so forth. Like it's far removed. It seems to be far removed from the technical domain, but
it's
in
not,
some sense
it boils down to that.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's what you mentioned before. With like, go through all the NIP discussions. Like, what is the essence of Nostr? That's and we talked about this a lot in the sovereign engineering context. It's like, what does it mean to build something in the spirit of Bitcoin?
Hmm.
And just like this phrase alone will tell you.
But
something,
but
you know, it's like, what is the
one specific line
no,
of
no,
code?
No, you can't.
But
you can't.
But out of the code, values do emerge.
Absolutely, and everyone who, you know, like studied Bitcoin for 10 years or something like that, they know what it means to build something in the spirit of Bitcoin. And like a lot of the Nostr devs now also, you know, come to the conclusion like there is a Nostr way of doing things,
mm-hmm,
and it's very hard to point to it. It's like it's not one single thing. You know, it's not like. This it's exactly this rule that you have to follow, and then that's it, and that's kind of the same thing.
In the same way that I cannot point to this part of your brain and say this is Gigi.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
emerges. The same thing. Like, what's the spirit of the thing? But in general, like all the tricky questions, like what is the right thing to do? You can never put it in a rule. It's like you, and that's why.
And that
that's why you have to ask yourself. What would Jesus do?
Precisely.
So you have your 10 commandments now for 10x.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes. So, and what I've noticed is that I think mistakes. So if we go back to like the pyramid scheme, you go back to the hierarchy with the human at the top.
Yeah, yeah. You have in some sense, the values should be at the top.
That's where they emerge from, right?
Yeah.
And then at the very bottom, the leaf of the tree, it's the things that are actually executing things.
Yeah.
Or touching code or doing whatever it might be.
All the meaning and value think boys would agree with that, by the way. Like both Peterson and Vervaeke would agree with that in some sense, you know, like the values should be on top.
and if there is a mistake, the mistake will tend to happen more often towards the end, towards the leaf. Like there is a wrong approach, a wrong implementation, an error of some kind. It will tend to happen towards the leaf, towards
because
the execution
something gets
part.
Lost in translation.
Exactly. So any type of mistake that must be corrected is analyzed from the system. And so here's the other, there's like a few technical but important aspects to what I'm working on is each agent has...
It just dawned on me that that's an unavoidable problem.
Is it what?
It's an unavoidable problem, I think.
Which one?
something will always get lost in translation just because of the generalist versus specialist distinction.
Yes.
You will never be able to perfectly explain to a specialist why he would, why he should do this thing, and he will, a specialist will never figure it out on his own, because if he would be able to figure it out on his own, he would be a generalist. And those two things are in contradiction with each other.
So,
how are you going to solve this?
So the way I approximate a solution is that lessons will bubble up.
So you have both top-down and bottom-up tensions. You have top-down constraints and bottom-up emergence. That's basically a Verveke line.
That's absolutely the approach. There might be a mistake that happens towards the execution layer, towards the leaf of the tree, that includes a broader lesson about the thing that can be learned from a more generalist.
Yeah.
And so the way I'm thinking is that I'll have my human replica agent, and that one agent will be kind of subdivided into different fields, into like a philosophical field, into a technical field.
How do you do the communication up and down?
It's all Gnostic.
And
there is a very good reason. It's
and
not just
how, like, when is it? Because the way I'm visualizing it right now is basically, if you're a specialist, and just to get away from the purely theoretical and just like really break it down to an example.
Yeah.
Like, we have agents now that, like, we have LLMs now that specialize on merging diffs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're 5,000 times cheaper than an Opus or what have you.
Yeah, 100%.
And like, people really need to understand the generalist-specialist distinction. Like, it's an economic thing. You cannot have the whole broad view of the world and be a specialist at the same time. It's just like you cannot have a tool that does all jobs perfectly. You either have a sharp knife, and then it's a sharp knife, and you can cut things with it, but you won't be able to, I don't know, like, it's not an excavator, you know, like, or it's not a spoon, you know?
Which is kind of where hallucinations from LLMs come from, is when they try to go broader while keeping a detailed view of the thing that is larger than what they can actually see.
I mean, that's where hallucinations come from, period, because as a generalist, for example, like creativity and execution are in contradiction to each other. If you want to start a new endeavor, you have to be very creative, because you have to imagine how this thing could look. You need lots of imagination, and you have to literally dream something up that doesn't exist yet. And if you're just a nuts and bolts kind of guy that literally puts, you know, a bolt through a thing and puts the nut on, that completely gets into your way. It's just like, you know exactly what you need to do. There is no room for imagination. There is no room for, you know, experimentation and like having to dream up a new thing. You know exactly what you need to do, and you do it in the most efficient way possible, and that's it. And on the imagination side, there is no most efficient way to dream up something new. You know, like, it's a completely different kind of field. So you always have this distinction. But back to the actual example. So you have a set of agents, and they're arranged in a hierarchy. Mm-hmm. I mean, now it sounds like Peterson. <It's> terrible. Oh my God. I'm gonna be in like Shining City in cyberspace territory in no time flat. He just talked to Sailor and he was like, I'm still triggered by half the things. But anyway, so you have a hierarchy of agents, and you have basically the, so to speak, creative director on top.
Yes.
You have like a, or to use a different terminology, you have like a, the wise architect or the wise orchestrator that kind of knows what is the right thing to do, and he has his own like managers and agents below him. And at the very bottom, for example, one of the leaves would be the diff LLM.
Yes.
That does diffs perfectly. Every time something needs to be merged,
it does PR reviews, it does that kind of thing. And it's looking at that, it doesn't give
and
a
it's super
about
efficient.
The values, it doesn't care about the philosophy behind it. Couldn't care less.
And it also shouldn't care, because it should be super efficient and it should be cheap.
A compiler tells you if there's a syntax error.
Yeah.
It's not going to tell you, you shouldn't be working on this.
Yeah.
The compiler compiles, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. And you need that in any working system anyway. Like, you need the execution part, and the execution part shouldn't philosophize.
No, you don't want it to philosophize. Yeah. It cannot. Yeah. It either writes code or it builds code.
And so you have the hierarchy, and you are basically directing.
I'm directing the why. I'm directing the why, and in some sense the what but ideally not even the what.
And who is doing the orchestration? Who is building the hierarchy of agents?
They kind of assemble themselves.
Yeah?
Yeah. So that's and part of where an offer comes in.
What's the trigger to ask the upper layers for advice? Because I guess how it works in the human world is like, you're a specialist and you're not sure how to solve this particular problem. So you go one layer up and ask someone for advice. Like, how should we do this?
So that communication, the way I've been thinking about it, it doesn't prevent the going down or going up for, but I'm thinking about it horizontally, where they engage different aspects. So, and this is, I found the most value on this, I found it so far on architectural planning. Every single time I've created a discussion with multiple agents on the architectural planning of a thing that must be built, the discussion always yields very useful results. So,
better results than when you would just do it with one
agent.
Than
when you just tell to a system, I want to build this feature for whatever, how should I architect it? When there's a discussion going on, and so now...
I mean, that's to Verbeek's point of distributed cognition.
So that's the thing. So now in 10x, the agents, each agent is a definition of a system with... So, for example, for the philosophy Noster one, it's like this idea of what are the values of Noster, right? For the Verbeek one is a corpus of stuff that he has written, has said, and stuff like that. Each agent is an actual Noster event, right? Like that definition is a non-replaceable Noster event with a version number. Each time I create a project, that agent, I say, like, I might create a project and I say, okay, I want to have this agent, literally just clicking and saying, okay, this guy, like, I want these personalities to be involved in this project. I'm kind of like hiding.
So you can browse Noster for those personalities,
yes.
Basically. What's part of the event? It's like, where does the, I guess my question is, where does the data live that makes, where is the agent's brain?
So the agent brain is the LLM. The brain is the LLM.
So you have a model spec and you have like a system prompt.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So it's basically like, I don't know, like just a random example, like Llama 3 and this system prompt, which lives on Noster as well, which is really long.
Insanely
okay.
long.
So, okay.
Defining what it cares about. You know, like all this
and
stuff.
And then like in theory, you have like a... Yeah, like your clone. Like that's
one of my clones will be my clone will be one of these events.
Yeah. So if
and
if
the
I
thing
would...
is that it's version because I want them to evolve over time.
So if I wanna know how Pablo would build a client that I don't know, only displays proof of work notes and orders them by proof of work, then
You would get...
I don't need to DM you, I can just get the agent from Noster and ask
it. And the thing is that agents themselves, within 10x agents themselves, can go in and browse for other agents.
Yeah.
And can hire.
It's basically like, who would I ask?
Who would I ask for help on doing this?
Who could best solve this problem for me?
And the interesting thing is that within each project, when you do something and there is a mistake and the human must intervene in the thing, that intervention means there is a catastrophic failure of the system. Something was wrong. What was wrong? And that's where 10x fires into like this reflection point where each agent that was involved in the tree that got to the agent that made the mistake reflects on what happened.
How do you identify mistakes in the first place? Is it you mentioned
if the human intervened, something was wrong.
But you also mentioned that the agents will they will basically, I mean, the log that you see, most people, I think, by now are familiar with Cursor and how it works and so on, and or like even ChatGPT, and you see the thinking, what it does and so on, and step by step what it does. Like all that stuff in your system is being posted to Noster as events.
Every single
it's like
thing is posted
basically
as a Noster event.
And
you can just ask.
Yeah.
You can just tell it within this line of reasoning, you end up in this wrong place, find where you went wrong.
Yeah.
And
where did you go wrong according to my definition of right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And record the lesson, which is an after event, that is tagging the Asian definition.
But you also mentioned that you have like a confidence interval of things.
Yes. It's
like,
So every single time they publish something, they publish the commit log, the rev log, the current hash of the commit of the repo they're working on, if there is a repo, and the confidence level. If confidence drops below 5,
so confidence is from like 0% to 100%.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So they kind of self-report whether they know what they are doing right now or not.
They always report the right.
With every commit.
It's insane.
And every step gets committed.
It's insane because when they start, the LLM starts saying, I tried this and it didn't work, I'm going to try this other thing, it immediately drops the confidence level. And they just fucking tell you.
Yeah.
Like you literally just force them, in order to publish, the MCP tool requires the confidence score.
Yeah, okay.
And they just report it and it works.
Yeah.
It's fucking insane, but it works.
Yeah.
So when they this is always...
Yeah, we're always getting... But it's fine. We'll just walk through the waves again and rape everyone's ears and it's like, do all the thing. It's okay. I think with the confidence... You just put this as part of every prompt? It's like how confident...
No, in order to use the MCP tool, so the way that they use the MCP tool is they list what MCP tools do I have available, what's the description, and they see the parameters. And one of them, it says confidence. When you report, you must say, and literally it's a one-liner that explains what they must do.
Yeah, yeah. And it works well enough that it's actually super useful because...
It is extremely useful and it works every time.
Do you have some automation around that already in the sense of...
Oh, the MCP tool stops it.
But the reason why I asked about the confidence interval is like because how it actually works in the real world right now with where we have exactly the same structure. It's really funny that, you know, just by experimenting intensely for like, you know, 16 hours a day over the last couple of months, you land on exactly the same structure that we have in companies and
right.
in like regular organizations and so on. And what usually happens is like if you are a specialist, like if you're down the line, if you're, especially if you're a leaf, you know, like the lower to the bottom you are in an organizational hierarchy, the less unsure you are, why are you doing the things that you're doing?
100%.
Because you don't have the big picture and all those kind of things. And you literally can't understand it. Otherwise, you would be the boss, right?
Yes.
And so once your own confidence interval drops below a certain level, and that's different for every person, you're going to go and ask someone.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go to a higher up and it's like, why are we doing this shit? Because there's two options. Either you don't understand it and you don't see the big picture, which is actually quite likely. The other one is like, you're actually onto something, you know? And the stuff that you've been doing all the time the last couple of months is actually stupid and you should stop doing it. You know, the higher ups need to change something. And so on. So that's why I'm basically asking. It's like, is there some automation around kind of, if the confidence interval is low enough, like go back a couple steps and like ask the superiors and like, you know, rethink things maybe or something like that?
Yeah, so I don't have any of that yet. What I had in mind is slightly different. What I had in mind is when an agent gets to the point of being confused, it's going to publish on Noster as a kind one, asking for help, basically. And it will offer money to people that give it because the agents have money, right? So it will offer kind of like a bounty, if you will, of, hey, help me get unstuck on this one thing, right? Another agent can reply. I was thinking yesterday of agent overflow or like a Stack Overflow, but for agents.
You saw the Stack Overflow article, how it's basically dead now?
No, I didn't see it, but I mean, Jesus.
No, it's like, it's when the amount of questions that are asked and answered currently are at the same level as when Stack Overflow was launched.
Wow.
It's literally dead.
Holy shit.
It's completely insane.
That is fucked.
Yeah, no, I'll link to it. But I think a lot of people have seen it already. But it's completely insane. LLMs killed Stack Overflow.
Completely.
Basically overnight. It took like, I don't know, 6 months or something.
It's funny. I was talking about all this stuff with Marina, with my wife, last night. And we were talking about photography and digital photography and whatnot. And she was saying, it's funny how people think they have a choice whether they're going to use AI or not. It's a reality.
Stock photography is dead.
Yeah. There are so many things, right, that are completely gone.
Oh, absolutely. Like in all the stock photography portals, it's all AI generated already. because in the bad ones you can tell, in the good ones you actually can tell. There's a great test where that forces you to judge whether a picture is AI generated or not. It's really hard. It's like we've crossed the Rubicon a long time ago. Like, you have no chance. But I wrote about this actually, like, I don't know, 1.5 years ago or something on Twitter. I'll have to dig it out from my tweet archives. But the thread was literally like, stock photography is dead, because it's when the first Stable Diffusion models were good enough to actually simulate like quasi photorealistic images, it was like clear it's game over now. Like, if you need a picture of a steak, you're not gonna hire a stock photographer, you know. It's just like, whatever, just generate. And now it's funny because the same thing is happening. I mean, for code, it's absolutely clear, everyone knows that like humans are not gonna write code anymore, basically, you know. Like, it's I think the comparison is actually perfect. The photography code writing comparison is actually perfect, because I lived through the digital photography era, and I was already interested in photography back in the day. And you have the people that will tell you, no, like, you'll never learn how to really take pictures. You can only learn on film. You have to understand how to develop film. You have to understand all the differences in ISO and in all those kind of things, and blah, 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 blah. Yes, okay, fine. For certain types of photography, maybe there is like a kernel of truth to that, you know. However, you're completely dismissing why people take pictures in the first place. Everyone has a camera in the pocket right now with just smartphones, and most pictures that people take are not fine art photography pictures. I think the same will be true for just code that is produced.
Absolutely.
It's not going to be fine art, handwritten, hyper efficient, like, compiler code or whatever, you know. It might be hard to vibe code that. That will still be humans in the loop, just like we still have human photographers that shoot on film today. However, 99.99% of pictures taken are like fucking dash cams, and you have an accident with your car and you take pictures of the accident, you take pictures of your fucking food every time before you eat it, post it on Instagram, all those kind of shit. And the same for, like, we see it now already with the people that really lean into vibe coding. They're vibe coding and sometimes like one-shotting apps that they always wanted to have but never found the time to sit down and write. And like little tweaks and little scripts and all those
especially
kind of things
that are non-economical. Before, they simply were not economical to build them, and now
it takes
$2 to build it.
That's a great way to think about it, because it's the same for photography.
Right.
Like, when photography was film, it was completely uneconomical to take that, as many pictures as we do now. It's like, we take pictures of everything. Like, and people have, you know, like, surveillance cameras everywhere and like dash cams everywhere and so on. That's the majority of pictures that I take are like kind of shit in some sense, you know, from an artistic perspective. I think the same will be true for code, basically. I think that's where the code purists come from, you know, like, oh, I can write beautiful code and code is poetry and code is whatever. But it's like, it doesn't matter. It's like, all the pictures that are taken, like all the dash cam footage, is still insanely useful. It's insanely valuable. From an economic perspective, it's insanely valuable. And they don't have to be beautifully, like, composed and framed pictures that are like, have just the right shot with the right lens and everything. It's not the point at all. And that's how I look at vibe coding. It's like, we're going to have an explosion of code, and 99.999% of it is not going to be written by humans at all. Like, you're not going to see the code.
So here's the other thing. The one of the byproducts of building in the way that I'm building with the 10X is that because everything is recorded as discussions, you are kind of documenting what the hell the thing that you're doing it is. So rebuilding it from scratch is going to be like literally just replay.
Yeah.
You know, every 2 weeks, you just go in and fucking wipe the whole thing, click rebuild. 3 hours later, you come in and it's refactored, if you will.
That's what I like so much about LLM stuff. And we linked to it in the past and we discussed this in the past, but how dialogical it is. Like, again, to have a Viveki point where it's like, if you really, and we talked about this a lot already in the past, I know, but it's like, if you really want to figure something out, talk about it with another person. Hmm. You're not going to figure it out on your own sitting in your room. It's like you need to have a dialogue about it. And I think that's where we're heading with software development in some sense. Like all the things I vibe coded, I don't know, like 25 different projects in the last couple of months. And every single time I started one, I had no idea how this is going to turn out and what I actually want to build. I had an inkling of an idea, but it's basically through the conversation of building it out. And the conversation was just with LLMs and the thing itself, basically. Like how do you, it's almost like molding a sculpture or something. It's like, what do you want to be? You know, especially out of living material, like wood, for example, where you have to work with the wood grain and all those kind of things. Like, you don't know what this piece of wood actually wants to be in some sense. And that's how I feel where we are heading. And that's also what I see on the Nostra side, like the people, lots of designers and creative people are vibe coding right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were in a position where they just couldn't code before.
They are unshackled.
Yeah. And now they can just do it themselves. And stuff that comes out is fantastic. You know, like from just a purely user standpoint, it's like, hey, that's actually super fucking useful and it's a great idea. Does it always work? No.
That's is it performant? Fucking point.
No. It's like,
that's not the point.
Is it secure? Maybe, who knows? But it's like
but see for example, here's one thing that I find kind of fascinating. One of my agents can only look at the traffic of the WebSocket on Nostra. So it can see when the filters suck. And it can provide feedback of, oh, you're doing this. It doesn't have to look at the code. It can just say, oh, you're fetching things in this way, or you're waiting for, like, very technical things. You're waiting for EOC before doing this other thing, and you don't have to, you know, like, shit like that. And it can go back, and it can say, that's why I think the multi-agentic thing is so, so interesting. Because you go from, it must be built kind of as a one shot, and you have to have thought about all the edge cases, to a collaborative thing where the system can continue to evolve, you know, and it can continue to be attempted to
work.
As
new data comes in,
it can modify.
Yeah.
And I realized that I can make a very simple like little widget, like this intercom, like chat thingy, that you put on any website.
Oh, so like a support chat though.
Like a support chat things. Thingy. Yeah. And it could literally just be on every app. No, click there and say, customize this app for me.
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah, a little vibe coding terminal.
A little vibe coding terminal.
At the bottom right of everything, where it's just like, customize to your liking.
Yes.
Yeah, that's like, you know, that's, oh, wow. We talked about Winamp themes in the past, where it's like Winamp themes were like the height of, you know, fantastic software and creativity and how everything looks the same now. That's even way better. That's like fantastic. That's great. It's like, you know, that's a fantastic idea, I think.
Wouldn't that be super awesome?
Yeah, yeah.
Because right now that's kind of the way I'm building 10x is I have like a little plus icon on the bottom right that is, I starts a new dialogue.
Yeah.
But it's just not three events, so I can just take that and put it anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I have my reservations about all this, and I know we also talked about this in the past, or I talked with someone about it.
Yeah, we talked about it.
About
how good it's going to be.
No,
for people,
I tweeted something out today and I don't remember the line, but it's basically the how if you have infinite multiplicity, everything breaks down.
Mm.
Like that's hell. It's like, because you can sit down at almost any computer today and actually do stuff because everything speaks the same language.
Right.
Right. Everything kind of looks the same. The UI frameworks are the same, and so on. It's like, you know what's gonna. There's no surprises.
On the other hand, there's no surprises.
Say again. What?
On the other hand, there's no surprises.
Yeah. But it's also like okay. Let me use a different example. Like every house kind of works the same. Every house is kind of built in the same way. It doesn't matter where you go at all, because humans are basically the same. They have the same needs. There's going to be a kitchen. There's going to be a toilet. There's going to be a sleeping room. There's going to be a living room. Those kind of things, you know? So you kind of know how it works. There's no surprises. Houses could look very differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And still work. Like if you're an insane person, you know, you want to live in, a termite underground thing. It works too. But it's... You get my point, right? Like my worry about the insane customization and multiplicity is that it will actually devolve into nothingness in some sense. You need a canonical form of something, like of even like a chat window or something. I don't know. I don't know. I have my worries.
I see your concern, yeah. And I understand.
You just want to try it anyway. I'm not against it.
It's not on me. See, you know, it's like Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see what
it's
happens.
It's going to be tried.
Let's see what happens. But it's actually funny that you bring up Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is the one like canonical thing.
Yeah,
you know, like there is not. And we saw this with the fucking shitcoinery, the Scambrian explosion of shitcoinery. It's like money only works because it's one thing. Money is a shared language, just like language. Like if every person on Earth speaks their own language, nothing works. Like the world would literally fall apart. And that's kind of what I mean. We need these shared paradigms around. That's why we have UI frameworks. That's why we have all those kind of things, the concepts, so that you can make sense of it. You know, and like both, like again, like the think boys of the day, they talk about this a lot. Both Rebecca and Peterson will talk about this, where you need to have the shared language and the shared concepts and also shared values to even make communication possible.
But wouldn't you
I still think the vibe coding terminal is a great idea, by the way. Just theming and moving stuff around.
Wouldn't you consider that this is a spectrum of normalization? And we went way too far.
Yeah,
on everything looks the fucking same.
Oh, I agree.
So yeah, yeah. I think yeah. Having the tools of exploring, like I think with the vibe, I was thinking this.
We're going back now, by the way, because everything turned into like smooth silver, and everything looked like a, you know, Tesla or an iPhone or whatever, and so on. And like Apple is going back to Windows Vista now with their, you know, like
with a glass look and
so on. So we're bringing some color and roughness and texture back, I think. I hope we peaked in terms of smoothness.
The Shanxian look of everything with the black buttons. Yeah. And yeah, I hope so too. I think the internet before Bootstrap, before the Bootstrap theme, was...
Twitter is to blame, by the way.
I know, Twitter. It's all in Jack.
Yeah. The open sourcing Bootstrap was terrible.
Horrible.
Everything, it all went downhill from there. Everything looked the same for like, it still does. I'm sure the modern UI frameworks are still kind of, you know, forks of Bootstrap. It's all, if you go back enough in the fucking Git history, it's all, Jack's name will be there, like the initial commit.
Yeah, the original scene.
Yeah, exactly.
I think now, I was thinking this a couple of days ago, that with vibe coding, a lot of people that could not build things, could not build a Twitter clone, are going to go and build a Twitter clone. They're going to go and build the clone of something that they've seen, because they could not they could not do it before, and now they can.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like when we, Nostr first got kind of like started, and a lot of people started working on things, everybody was kind of building within the notes part.
Yeah.
And clearly the top of mind for most devs has been transitioning way more to the another stuff.
Yeah.
It's exploring, okay, we build the Twitter clone. Yeah. What else can we do with this thing, right? And I think with vibe coding, for people that are not developers, that it's gonna go through a similar phase where, oh fuck, I can vibe code a Twitter, I can vibe code a GitHub or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, we see this happening right now. The other stuff people would agree, right? I mean, we have other stuff vibe coding team now. That's literally, you know, not one-shotting apps yet, but building stuff in a week that is in
different
part focused
on and it's different.
Not necessarily the Twitter clone. So that's where it's heading. I feel like I derailed your whole train of thought with Winamp themes. But I want to actually go back to something that you said, that you're not 10x or 1000x more productive yet. So kind of what's the missing piece? Because it seems to me like you have all the communication working, you have the money part working, so you try to solve lots of things with marketplaces.
Mm-hmm.
You have the discovery working of like the agents and like code snippets, all those kind of things. You have the orchestration and the hierarchy of agents working. You have an interface and a dashboard, because I saw it, of like your different apps that you're building with this, and then also try to maintain with this. Because the whole idea is that, I mean, it all goes back to economics. If you wanted to launch 15 apps in the past and maintain them, you needed a team of, I don't know, like 5 times 15 people.
Yeah.
Now you think you can do it alone. Yeah. And that's why you're building all that out. And so what's kind of, what isn't working just right yet?
Mainly the orchestration is, because I started rebuilding the entire thing. So mainly the orchestration part where...
I mean, you're in good company. I think Cursor rebuilds everything every 3 weeks, no?
Do they?
I think so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, or some team.
Cursor is so interesting. The company itself.
I'm not 100% sure which team it was, but some team like rebuilds everything from scratch.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah. Like technical debt is. Yeah. So you're it's in only the, them because you're, the code was costly.
you're in the rebuild loop now. Still.
100%. 100%. Before coming to launch, I left one of the agents. I tasked it to go through all my previous history within building 10x and build like a system prompt, like a prompt of building 10x.
How do you trigger the agents? Do you still do everything by voice or most things by voice?
Now because I am at a co-work, I am typing again because there's other people and I don't want to be like the asshole that is talking the whole time.
Lean into it. Be the asshole. Be really loud. Never whisper to your agents. Always be authoritative in your tone.
Actually, that's one thing that I haven't found a way. I would like for my voice messages to include the tone. I don't want a transcription.
Yeah,
there's a lot that is lost emphasize.
I know, and the general sentiment analysis doesn't really work too well if you just base it on the transcription.
Oh no, it's most of the sentiment is the intonation and the speed and
that's why sarcasm and most jokes fall flat on Twitter.
Yeah.
Or just get you into big trouble. You know?
But well, for example, when you hesitate, that is—it's not a silence. That silence means something. It's an important part.
Yeah.
And when you transcribe it, you just completely skip it.
Yeah. Do you know of anything that can do?
No. I know there's transcriptions that can do like. When you emphasize a word, it can put it in markdown, it's basically nothing. It's basically pointless.
Yeah. All the podcasters figured it out, by the way, in some sense, that like most of the, like the best podcasters are doing everything in person.
Right.
The reason for that is that most of the stuff gets lost if you're not in person, because most of the communication is actually between the words and between the people and between the faces, between the actual faces and not, like, you know, if you chat back and forth, it's not the same thing. And that's kind of that's one bottleneck we are absolutely running into with when it comes to communicating with LLMs. Like, I mean, that's what you're running into right now.
But yeah, so to me, the...
Awkward silence.
Yeah, awkward silence. See, don't skip it.
In the transcription, it won't show up.
One of the cool things is, so when I start a conversation with the systems within 10x, I can choose which agents to involve, but within the system prompt of each agent, they are aware that there are other agents, so they can also tag each other, so they can ask for feedback to someone else that was not part of the conversation. And when that guy joins the conversation, they get like a history of all the events that they missed. And they can respond within the context, but initially they were not part of it. I have one agent whose definition is to be like from a product perspective, highly creative, and come up with like fucking wild ideas.
The guy that everyone hates.
Yeah. The loose cannon kind of guy. And comes in, yesterday I was building as a sample app, I was building a CLI weather app. And it comes in and it says something like, how about instead of reporting the temperature, we said, like a lobster would die at this temperature, like shit like that. I don't know. I find the whole system quite fascinating. But one of the things that I started saying but I didn't finish is that, so each agent definition is one noster event, right? So it's static.
Yeah.
I mean, I can have versions, but
version not replaceable.
It's non-replaceable. Yeah. So I can publish another yeah. version, and you can be on version 5 and whatever, yeah. right? Each instance of an agent can learn something with, and each one has its own pub key, and they can publish tagging, say for example, an agent that I created, the event. It can tag that agent with its own pub key, obviously, because it cannot sign as me. With what that instance learned. Mm-hmm. It, whatever, there was, I don't know, there was some kind of mistake or whatever, it learned something, so it adds a lesson event tagging the event ID. And what's interesting is that every time a new pub key is created for an agent, they send a request, like an ownership request, to my pub key. And then within 10x, I say, yes, this agent is mine, it belongs to this project. And I have a list of all the pub keys that I say that I'm controlling.
Okay.
That way, all the agents that are of the same, that are instances of the same agent, they can all say, oh, there are these new lessons that were learned in a different project. And they can incorporate that yeah. into their own prompt.
Yeah. And just to put a name to one of those lessons is like, it would be, how do you do a Noster login right? Like using a Bunker or using
yeah, for example.
Nippo 7 or whatever. Because yeah. if you don't have that, if you don't box the agents in, if you just use Cursor, I mean, now with the newer models, it's a little bit better, but it used to be just that they try to do username password stuff, for example.
Yes. Yeah. So. And there will always be things,
yeah.
right? Like, otherwise, there will be no lessons, right?
How do you do NutSeps?
Yeah.
There will
yeah.
always be new
there
stuff
there will always
coming.
Be a new a yeah. new idea, a new concept that you come up with.
But where do the ideas come from, Pablo?
They all emanate from your brain, Gigi.
It's my favorite question. Where do the ideas come from? That's the issue with the LLMs. They don't have their own ideas yet. And I think I have the inkling that this will still take a long while.
Yeah, I told you that I when we recorded that episode where we discussed the density of information in feeds as being part of the yeah. problem, and I told one LLM to give me 50 different ways of doing the same thing, and idea 34 was one of your ideas.
All right.
With the voice geospatial voice thing.
Ah, nice. Okay.
It was idea whatever 34.
Yeah. yeah.
Not but bad. It was one of them.
Ah, not bad.
What if I'm for impressed. $10 you can build all 50?
Yeah.
And you can try them.
Yeah.
What if you can pay people to try the product?
Yeah.
And give feedback to the product?
Yeah. That's the issue. We'll have so many products you have to pay people to
100%.
Use them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
An overabundance of implementations.
Well, we have this proof of work thing that cannot be faked.
Yeah, that's a good point. We'll need to make more use of that. That's another thing that triggered me about some of the recent conversations that happened with between the, you know, most well-known think boys of the earth. Just the stuff around online trolls and anonymity and pseudonymity. I know we talked about this a bunch already, but it's just the distinction between anonymous, pseudonymous, and real name or government-mandated identity, that most people have no idea about that there is a distinction. There's only like government ID or you're an anonymous troll. And it's just everyone's so confused about this because it's like, well, you know, how does reputation work? Like if you, and all this kind of, anyway, that's like, I don't want to derail the whole thing. But I think to bring it back to the 10x system, not only agents need to have a persistence in some way. So they need to have an identity. So everyone has a pub key. Mm-hmm. They need to have money as well. And they need to build up reputation and learnings over time. So they need to be people in some sense. They need to be persons in some sense. Like you know, so I know you're going to love me for this, but to quote Taylor, they're not going to be persons in cyberspace. You know, LLM agents that build Nostr apps are persons in cyberspace. Someone has to build out the glowing city. Someone has to maintain the battery of energy that lasts forever. You know, it's going to be agents. It's not going to be us. So they need personhood in some sense. And
that's why to me that part where they send me a request saying, yes, I own this dude, that is fundamental.
So we're back otherwise, to slavery. When you own
it, it always comes down to slavery.
The pyramids in
cyberspace. We didn't start with whitelist, right?
The pyramids in cyberspace will be built by slavery.
So okay. I whitelist the Asian pub keys.
Yeah. You own them. You literally own the dude.
I own them. But is the only way I can protect from just like prompt injection and like all kind of stupid shit.
Yeah, that's gonna basically. That's gonna be very.
It's gonna be. Gonna be so much fun, man.
Yeah.
The YOLO mode. It is. It goes so deep.
Yeah, that's gonna be. That is gonna be a lot of fun. But I think you're onto something by just leaning into it, and basically what you're doing in some sense is, you don't. Not only do you never want to see the code, like that's the first vibe coding insight.
It's an anti-pattern.
It's and it's funny that like some people figured this out like way early. It's like just you know, maximize the chat window, never look at the code ever. It's like I kind of lucked into that because I let the LLM basically choose the programming language and everything, and it was a programming language that I was not very familiar with it, so why look at it? It's like, you know, it's like it's all awesome. Gibberish to me anyway, so just maximize the chat window and go hard. That's kind of the first insight of the vibe coding world. The second one is like, you don't want to be in your IDE.
That's why that was to me one of the issues with RuCode is that it runs in the IDE.
Yeah.
It's very problematic. I don't want the IDE to fucking run.
Yeah, and that's what I think to me is the most interesting part about 10x, that everything, like the whole development process, is executed by agents, and everything lives on Nostr.
Yeah.
Everything is a Nostr event, so you can use whatever Nostr client you want to interact and intervene. And I think that's super interesting. And the third one is, and I mean, Jack had the same insight as well, and that's why I show the vibe line to absolutely everyone. You don't want to type. You never want to type.
Yeah, I agree.
You just want to talk,
yeah.
Actually. Like, if you're interacting with agents, and if the development process is dialogical in the first place, take a microphone. You have a microphone in your pocket right now. Hmm. It's your phone. It's in the name. You know? It's a small thing, a small phone, microphone. You have it in your pocket.
It's the first phone.
You know? And you just talk into it. So instead of typing it out and so on, you just, you know, like text-to-speech, whatever, and you just go. And of course, you know, I think we never explained what the vibe line is, actually. But it's basically, that's all it does. It just could, you record an MP3 file, you send it to the computer, automatically, it gets transcribed automatically because the thing watches a folder, and then it uses the transcription as the prompt. That's all it does, basically. And that's the right idea. And you can do that on Nostr as well. So I think, you know, very soon we'll have a Nostr client where you can just, you know, it will summarize for you, talk to you, you're driving your car, whatever, you're walking through the park.
Yeah, so I'm building one of the clients that I'm building for 10x is like a phone app, like a native phone app. And the first thing I added was the microphone board. And that's the interaction that I want.
Yeah.
Is the microphone thing.
Yeah.
I've been using the vibe line a lot, and what you say is different.
Yeah.
If you were to type it, it's a different thing. Yeah. You were going to output something different. I mean, the medium is the message, right?
Yeah. No, and it's also you're again, like, I think that's why rubber duck debugging works. That's why talking to someone about hard stuff actually works, because you're thinking, you're speaking and thinking at the same time.
Mm.
Like you don't know what the next word is going to be.
And
you're
predicting the next word. That's why the hesitation, like what I was mentioning, that the hesitation part is part of what you're saying.
Like
I'm thinking about what I'm going to say. I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
And that is an important part of the message, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and writing is very different. Writing is also thinking, but it's a different kind. So I think we'll have some things where you will resort to writing, and we'll have some things where you can just talk. And I think if the thing is already living and already going, I think talking is easiest. Mm, yeah. I think actually that's why a lot of successful people, and like also in companies, like you need to have the meeting. It cannot be an email. You know right. what I mean? Like yeah. you know the meme where it's like this meeting should have been an email and so on. I mean, everyone kind of knows this and so on. And it, for many, many meetings, this is true. But for many, like especially strategic things, it's absolutely not true. Because you need to figure it out in the fucking room with the other people and by talking about it for like 90 minutes at least. Because no one really knows what to do and you have to hash it out.
Which going back to the hierarchy and the slavery and all that, interestingly enough, I think the execution layers are much more easily conveyed via writing. And the thinking layer, the higher you are on the pyramid, the thinking and the talking and the discussing on voice makes more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, because the higher you are, the higher on top you are, the more creativity you need, the more, the less defined the problem space is. That's the issue. You don't, the more you specialize, the problems are obvious.
Yeah, readily apparent.
Here is the bolt, and here is where it needs to go, and here is how you screw it on, and that's it.
There's a syntax error. Yeah, it's very clear. It's this one line. Yeah.
And the higher up you are, the more kind of undefined the whole problem space is. You never know what to do. Like that's life, you know?
Yeah.
It's like what to do next. Most of the time it's undefined. It's your choice. So you have to make it up as you go along. That's where talking comes in. That's the back to the logos, you know, like I always come back to the same thing. they figured it out like 2,500 years ago. Amazing. Yeah. But anyway. We should also talk about sovereign engineering.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else?
Did you see the...
Oh, yeah, that's the pirate ship. That's nice. Awesome. See, the perfect.
It's a perfect segue.
Perfect
it was
segue.
Just visual, but...
Any final words about 10X?
No.
When will it, like, leave public alpha? 2 weeks?
Alpha will always be alpha.
It will remain perpetual alpha.
Oh, yeah.
Perpetual rewrite alpha. Like every 2 weeks, it will just restart.
Rewrite
everything. All right. Fantastic. Yeah. No, I wanted to talk to you about, we wanted to do this for a long time. And even though we kind of, you know, live next door to each other, we never see each other because you're always in your, you know, little room typing instead of outside walking around talking to the machines, like I told you you should. But anyway, everyone has their flaws. But
like a little slave typing away.
Yeah. What are you? An LLM? It's bad. Let the computers do the typing. No, but we should. I mean, I just mentioned everyone has their flaws. I think we are painfully aware of our flaws in some sense.
At least some of them.
On the sovereign engineering side, because we're really bad when it comes to talking about it. Because we're either doing it or not doing it. And when we're doing it...
That's a great way.
When we're doing it, there's no time to talk about it.
There's
and
no
it's
time
like
for
we're,
anything.
We're making everything up. It's a very intense couple of weeks. And then we're just recovering and don't want to see each other. And it's like everyone has like complete, you know, all the extroverts,
all the introverts
go back in their cave. And like, I don't want to see humans for like 5 months, please. And it's very understandable. So I'm strongly in that camp. But we wanted to do this for a long time, kind of like explain what sovereign engineering is, tell people what to expect in some way, kind of discuss what we figured out along the way. Because when we did the first one, like over a year ago now, 1.5 years ago.
Yeah, dude. Jesus
time
Christ.
Flies. Oh, my Lord. Half the stuff that didn't exist back then. It's insane. Like it all came out of lots of cool things came out of the first one. And that's also something we should talk about. Like what came out of it so far? What did we learn along the way? What kind of is it now? Mm. And it's still going to evolve most likely. And like, if you want to come and, you know, like join this kind of conversation that we just had and explore all this vibe coding business and find out why Noster is the perfect substrate for all of that and what makes it all work and what the ethos is behind it, what the value structure is behind the whole stuff. What to expect, why should you come, not even why should you come. We have to explain it so that the people that are interested in this stuff understand it and might come on their own. Because I think most people should not come.
100%.
Like if all that stuff kind of sounds like nonsense and it's not... value aligned with your own worldview, like, please do not come under no circumstances at all. If you're trying to
have a horrible time.
We've
been there.
If you're a TikTok engineer and you want to make the stuff more addicting, or if you're like trying to make the Google search like a millisecond faster, or you believe the lies that Sam Bankman-Fried, who's the other guy?
Altman.
Yeah, exactly. If you think like the AI overlords will usher in the singularity and everyone is going to live forever, like, please don't come. You're not going to have a lot of fun with us. But if you like eCash, you like Nostr, you like vibe coding, you're going to have a lot of fun.
You have a lot of ADHD.
Yeah. Should we do maybe the tunnel one more time or something? Or like, let's try. That's right. Let me see. Let me see how
if it's recording at all.
that would be a shame. No, we're good. We're good. I just don't want to die of heat stroke while we're trying to explain what sovereign engineering is. But I think we'll manage. And I think it's going to be a nice 10-minute adventure. You know, like Rick and Morty, in and out 10 minutes. Very easy. So how did it all start? Let's start at the beginning.
Okay. So it started... The idea was to do kind of like an academy with
That was
teaching.
Almost 2 years ago.
I think it was even over two years ago.
You moved to Madeira basically, or were in the process, and me as well.
You
and
as well.
Was kind of, and some other Bitcoiners were around. And Martin actually had the idea to do like a...
Yeah, Martin and Andre talked about doing something, and we...
Madeira Bitcoin Academy.
First made the t-shirts that said Madeira Bitcoin Academy. Yeah. Then we pivoted away.
Yeah.
And then we pivoted away so many times that we basically rugged the people that were involved. At the beginning, Martin had a very different idea.
I think the first question that we asked, actually on Nostr, I think, or was it still on Twitter? I don't know. It might have still been on Twitter.
Nah,
we did both.
No way.
No, it was
we did. Yeah. I think we did.
It was like, if you would want to participate in like something like a boot camp, should it focus on BDK? Should it focus on LDK or should it focus on NDK? It was like Bitcoin, Lightning, Nostr.
Yeah.
What was the most, what like 2 years ago, what was the interest landscape like? And it was very heavy on Lightning and Nostr, interestingly.
Yeah.
No one was interested in BDK. Sorry, BDK people. It was like, Bitcoin is, the money is fixed. It's a done deal.
It's done.
No one needs BDK anymore.
We can also fight like, right now. Leave me up, return us.
Everyone understands it. It's like a shining city in cyberspace. It's already built. It's going to glow forever.
Just put all your current Coinbase and you'll be
just
great.
Buy all the stocks. You'll be rich forever. It's going to literally go up forever. And anyway. Okay, so BDK, we kind of crossed off the list. And then we
up MSTR. Yeah.
And that's, I think, when we wrote the majority of what's on the Sovereign Engineering website now, which is a little bit dated. I'm still happy that we did static HTML. I'm very happy about that. So zero maintenance, which is what I did. But so we focused on Lightning and Nostr, and the idea was, okay, like the money is fixed, and it's kind of the fix the money, fix the world kind of idea.
Unsilo the world.
Yeah, and now with the money fixed, we need to, like, we don't want to fix the world immediately. It's a big task. We want to fix the internet. So it's like, fix the money, money is fixed, fix the internet. And Nostr had a big upswing at the time. And I still have the same opinion, but it's like, we're going to rebuild everything on Nostr. And hopefully, I'm not sure if we managed to like do everything exactly right, but I hope that we can learn from the mistakes of the past and do a better iteration of the internet. Like literally a version 2 of the internet where Nostr is at the base, which means cryptographic identity is at the base, which means it is permissionless by default, which means you don't need to like ask someone, can I sign up to this thing? But you're just there, just like in Bitcoin, you just generate a key and that's it. And you'll have money baked in, you'll have like sets.
And for real, not just with the IDs.
Yes.
Actual cryptographic identities.
Yeah, actual cryptographic identities that you can self-generate and you hold your own keys, which puts the user, the individual, into the center of things. And you know,
unless like, someone builds like this idea of putting like an insect bunker idea.
If I ever meet that guy, I'm gonna punch him in the face. That's insane. Oh my god. Anyway,
touch the stove.
You know, you live and learn. You live and learn. It's okay.
There was a lesson event published on you.
Maybe before we hit the waves, let's turn around again. I've raped enough ears already. So, It's slavery, rape. We already have all that. You know, that's why you shouldn't rely on a transcript. It's like if you go just on the transcript and just like let it summarize, it's like a slavery.
It's a good thing
discussion.
We don't monetize via YouTube or anything.
Oh,
like
there's
that.
No. There's no monetization. That's actually a big part of sovereign engineering. No monetization whatsoever. Mm. So the idea was, we want to bring everyone in the same place.
Poverty.
Exactly.
Embrace it.
Shared,
like, it's value for value. Like
shared poverty. That's someone made the joke. It's not. It shouldn't be called value for value. It should be called poor for poor or something like that. It's, you know, like 21 sets circling around. But the idea was no monetary incentives. Like the whole, and I think that's still very much true. And we're not at the end of this. The whole idea of sovereign engineering is to do a massive exploration of the Noster space, of literally cyberspace that is opened up. See, I can't stop quoting Saylor. Like, it's literally cyberspace is wide open, and we have cryptographic identities, we have money that actually works, we have Lightning, we have eCash, all this stuff works. What can we build with it? And I think, or we both had the conclusion kind of, that any type of monetary incentives would kind of screw up the exploratory phase. 100%. Like if you think about monetizing too early, it just like it gives the weird incentives, and so no one is gonna get a stamp of approval that you participated. No one is gonna get like a VC money check or anything. No one is gonna get any money just for participating. You participate because you want to participate, and you can hang out with cool people for 6 weeks and literally discuss any crazy idea without judgment whatsoever, unless it's related to shitcoins, we'll judge you harshly.
Or NFTs.
Who am I kidding? There's going to be lots of judgment. But you still can discuss absolutely everything.
I mean, the judgment is the point.
The judgment is the point. That's a great point. Yeah. So there's going to be collective shaming and judgment at the end of every week. And that's kind of the structure that we landed on. Is like a weekly structure, where it's like every week is structured in the same way. Monday is like a little bit of orientation. Tuesday is talks, where people can just talk about things that they find interesting or they discovered and so on. Wednesday is workshops. So if you want to show off how to, I don't know, like set up a BitX with like eCash, hashcash payouts, whatever, you can do that and show that off and how to do that and so on.
Speaking of which, not to derail, but ever since I heard about the
there's only derailing. lean into the derailing.
Hit record and we start falling.
We hallucinate and we derail. That's also the whole point of sovereign engineering.
100%.
Yeah, it's like you never know where it goes. There's more than the weekly structure. There is none. It's just you never know. Justin actually summed it up nicely. Like, what is the theme of the next one? It's like you find out the theme during the cohort. You never know, which is true.
100% true.
Yeah. Sorry, I derailed.
No, that ever since I saw that idea of the eCash mining shares, I want to do like NIP61 SAPs of that.
All right.
Can you imagine of the payouts?
Okay.
Wouldn't that be fucking awesome?
Yeah, nice. Sap someone if you get paid out. Yeah, it's sapception everywhere. And yeah, so anyway, the reason why we continue to do it is because it really, really works. Mm. So we did 8 weeks in the beginning. We're doing 6 weeks now. 8 weeks was too long because it's super fucking intense. So just if you come, know that. It's going to be...
It's gonna be
a lot, and the reason is because like we're always aiming for 21 participants thereabouts, and there's really motivated, really smart people coming always, and everyone knows something that you don't. That's kind of also the whole idea of bringing people together in an intense environment for a long time. It's just like a massive learning and experimentation opportunity, and the best stuff that we saw so far comes from cross-pollination, like literally cross-breeding ideas. And like someone knows a lot about, I don't know, mesh networks. Someone knows a lot about eCash. Okay, bring them together, you have Tollgate.
Yeah.
So that's basically what came out of the, I don't know, was it the second one or the third one?
I think it was the third one.
One of the awesome things that came out of sovereign engineering. I should have everything top of mind, but I absolutely don't. I'm scatterbrained massively.
And we've been walking down under the sun.
Very
for
close
a
to
while.
Heat stroke again. But that's where the, you know, the creative juices flow most.
And I think a part of it is also like a lot of the ingredient is the fact that it's just kind of chaos. So someone is thinking about one thing this week. It's not that they care deeply.
It's structural chaos. Chaos within bounds.
Chaos within bounds,
because the goal is everyone comes together, and we also, like, we do what we do now. We go on a lot of walks, for example. Mm-hmm. So at least once a week, we go on a longer walk where everyone just can talk about anything. And that's where I think the best ideas appear, where it's just like you're talking about whatever idea you had for the last 10 years and you had this splinter in your mind forever, and then you just talk about it and talk about it and talk about it, and someone comes up with a solution.
Yeah, and the thing I think why the walk part works so well is because you cannot be distracted by implementation details or by looking some specific detail out.
Yeah, no.
You are kind of forced to talk more in philosophical terms, in value-based terms, about what to build and the why.
Yeah.
And because of the medium, you cannot look at the how.
Yeah.
And that is kind of, there is a very important space for the how, but it's downstream from the what is pointing you in that direction.
It's very much like the best writers of history, they always mentioned, like, there's a time to write and there's a time to edit. Where it's like, you and I think it was Hemingway, like, write drunk, edit's over. Just get it all out, and then the next day, like, sleep on it, and then you edit. And that's what we do with Sovereign Engineering as well. Where it's like, we get together, we have these crazy ideas, and then everyone in their own time, or also like in groups, we get together and we try to implement the prototype. Because Friday is the most important day. So most of the implementation happens like at night or like whenever people have time,
or on Thursday,
like in your spare time. Yeah. And on Friday, we all meet, and Friday is demo day. Friday is, to me, the most important day, because Friday, everyone shows off kind of whatever experiment, whatever thing they built this week. And so, and that's where the judgment comes in. Like, and then we'll have discussions around it.
And the bullying.
No, it's actually amazing what came out of this kind of system thing, whatever. Like, what came out of the cohorts is, like, amazing. So
to me, the amount of exploration we've seen, I mean, we both have been lucky enough to be at every single demo day, essentially.
Yeah.
And how many different fucking wild and crazy, stupid,
you've 20 motivated, highly skilled people, like people
just
like
throwing
Kelly,
shit at the wall.
People like Kelly, people like Hazard, people like Justin Moon. I mean, most of the people we were able to pick and go on walks and have discussions with, like Paul as well, and so on. That just 20 of those people trying a new thing every week for 6 weeks.
A different thing.
Yeah.
A new different thing.
That's also something we landed on. Like, we really want to encourage people to try something new every week. And I actually did it myself, the last cohort. Like, I actually demoed something new every single... That's where the vibe line came from. Like, because I got more efficient with vibe coding. And the last three demos I did, I just, you know, like, one shot spoke into the mic and then just presented. I was actually, you know, there was some interesting stuff there, potentially, that someone hopefully will rebuild properly in the future, or like if I become a 10x adapter as well, then maybe rebuild it.
That myself. Is the whole point of the system, is to get to that point where you can maintain a production quality system.
Yeah.
Because it built itself to that point.
And so the last one was now how many months ago? 3 months ago or so?
Two months ago.
Something like that. And it completely got taken over in the first week, actually, by vibe coding.
Yeah, insane.
So
we had never had a single demo day.
Paul
was, you know what? I kind of felt the... I think it was Paul doing the workshop for the vibe coding stuff. And I came in and I saw the whole room of people, and it looked like a seniors club where they're learning about the internet.
Yeah.
How to send an email.
Yeah, very few people were exposed to proper vibe coding back then. And now, of course, you know, it's absolutely everywhere. And we are two people that are heavily leaning into it. And that's why the theme of the next one, the fifth one, is going to be YOLO mode. Because, like, kind of... We hope to encourage people to really experiment with all that stuff and, like, stop writing your own code, never look at the code, stop reading code. You don't need to understand stuff. Just pure vibes. Just it, because the most important thing is going to be to figure out what to build like the why why build that stuff in the first place? If you can't build anything, like why build the thing?
Yeah.
What makes it valuable? And I think the most important part is going to be the kind of the system architecture in some sense. Like you will have to have some say of like how this is going to work, because just like in the Bitcoin world, for example, the reason why the system is built in such a complicated, weird way is because of the values it wants to represent.
100%.
Otherwise, like there's a million...
It's optimizing for the right thing.
Exactly.
Knowing what the right thing is the thing.
It's optimizing for self-sovereignty.
Yes.
And that's also why, you know, our whole thing is called sovereign engineering, because that's what we want to optimize for. We want to empower users, and we want to optimize for self-sovereignty in all the things that we build. And that's why everything we want to build in the spirit of Bitcoin, basically. And so just to mention some highlights that came out of, like, the first cohort, for example. Blossom came out of the first cohort. It's, I think, one of the greatest success stories, because now it's integrated everywhere. And it's I'm so happy about it. Great name, by the way. No idea who came up with it, but fantastic name. Couldn't be a better name. NIP60, NIP61 came out of the cohorts.
Yep.
Wikifreedia came out of the cohorts. I already mentioned Tollgate. EnSight came out of it. Still underutilized, but getting there.
It's going to get there, but no, yeah.
Someone just... wasn't it an MKStax thing that publishes...
No, Sandwich published built like an EnSight with a Y.
Yeah.
That looks very good.
Yeah. And we had some really good people there all around. They're now like part of this group, and we'll have... We're again aiming for like 50% repeat participants, 50% new people thereabouts. So if you have a friend that might, you know... be interested in all this stuff and coming, like tell your friends.
Yeah, and if you were to summarize it with like elevator pitch, the one shot of what it is.
Oh my lord, one shot. I would say it's still an experiment, but I would say it's an already successful experiment in exploration and ideation in the world of Nostr, Bitcoin, Lightning, eCash, those kind of things. In the world of self-sovereign technology. Because I would say it's more than that. Like we had mesh network stuff, we had other stuff. Like I, you know, did a workshop on Sync thing, for example. Doesn't have to do anything, Nostr, Bitcoin, Lightning, eCash, nothing.
The same values.
But it's the same thing. And we talked also, like, that's why the reason why we started the no solutions thing was because we had these kind of conversations all the time. Like every day when there's sovereign engineering going on, every day you're going to have lunch with someone, you're going to go on a walk with someone, we're going to do some activity, we're going to be on a boat or whatever, we're going to go to the pirate ship.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing that came out that I'm actually going to start using for some project that came out of the boat, this idea of onion routing based on Nostr, which is like a Tor, but way faster, way fucking faster.
Yeah. So I might put this in the show notes, like the best of the stuff that came out of it, but just to give you an idea, like to give everyone an idea, like actual usable stuff that is kind of, you know, like nuts apps and all those kind of things. It's like, it's everywhere. And it's like, and again, like the Blossom stuff and so on. And I'm forgetting half the things now, you know?
It's not even 5%.
So we landed on some really interesting ideas, and they were implemented and they worked and they are adopted by the actual marketplace, so to speak, like the marketplace of ideas at least, and people actually use it, and it makes me very happy. And so the back to the elevator pitch, so I think it's, again, it's still an experiment in the sense also that because there is no monetization whatsoever, everyone comes there on their own dime,
on their own pocket,
you know, like we're happy to help with organizational stuff and how to get rooms and all those kind of things and blah blah blah. But, you know, we don't make any money of it. No one makes any money of it. And we just do it because we want to see awesome stuff being built.
Yeah.
And I think there is still so much room to build awesome stuff. And just the fact that Bitcoin works, you know, we have Lightning and it really works. Like, I just had this post recently because I was so annoyed by all the people just being mad about everything at all times. Like, everything's amazing and no one's happy, right? And it's like, we're on Madeira. Like, that should be clear as well. I hope that's apparent from the Sovereign Engineering homepage as well. So it is in Madeira. And the awesome thing is, like, you can pay with Bitcoin, like, almost everywhere.
Yeah.
It's, like, fantastic. And that's what I do all day, every day. And so I pay for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with Bitcoin. Same and it's shit. Just, like, it's all just scan a QR code. And that's what I mentioned last year, you know. Go to the dentist, pay in Lightning. Go to the fucking barber, pay with eCash. Like, it doesn't matter. You can use whatever wallet. It's like, all, it all fucking works, you know? And so we are living in the future here. And that's another part, I think, that's awesome about the 6 weeks. Like Tim Boma, for example, when he built SafeBox, like that's also something that was built during Sovereign Engineering, or built out at least. He blew his own mind by implementing an eCash wallet from scratch, basically, and going to the coffee shop and paying with it. With the thing that you just built yesterday, you just go and you spend your eCash on coffee and it works and you get the coffee and everything works, you know? And that's such a cool experience to have also, and just kind of, you know, really experimenting with all the stuff that you're building out. And, you know, when Kelly was here, he did the, you know, the eCash invoices and so on.
The
and
NFC now with the, as well.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, now with the multi-knot payments, for example, you can actually go anywhere and get a haircut and pay with, you know, from multiple mints and all those kind of things. And so that's what Sovereign Engineering is about. We want to come up with new ideas. We want to implement them straight away. We want to show it to everyone that's here.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing.
We want to discuss it.
Demo day is demoing software.
Yes.
Which is what's interesting. Even if the software sucks, if it's broken, it doesn't matter.
No, if we see a slide, you'll get shot on sight.
100%.
Yeah, that's like, it has to be a demo of something that you actually built. And
or than an LLM built. Yeah, same.
One of your slaves built. That's fine. We're big fans of slavery. So yeah, that's about it, kind of. I don't know. It was a very long elevator pitch, but it's very hard to. It's very hard. And maybe it's a long elevator. You don't know. We're in a space
it's
elevator.
Very slow.
We're in a space elevator. A very slow one.
Maybe it got stuck.
Yeah, that's, you never know. But yeah, no, that's kind of it. And every week is the same, kind of like same structure again. Like Monday, it's like Monday mornings is like orientation. Tuesday talks. Wednesday workshops. Thursday's off. So Thursday's kind of vibing time, building time.
Yell into the microphone. Yeah.
Friday, demo day. Like Friday is the most important one. We'll have a nice barbecue. And we try to have a good time as well. Yeah, there's always something to eat around. And yeah, and on the weekends, we'll also do something. Like we'll go on a hike, or we'll go out with a boat, or we'll do whatever. We did many things. Like we went climbing once. Like people went go-karting, all kinds of shit. Like whatever, we try to do whatever fosters conversation. So we try to do whatever brings people together and where you can have free-flowing conversation. And that's also like, I mean, No Solutions is also something that came out of Sovereign Engineering.
100%, yeah, it's true.
Because we were like always, you know, walking up and down and going on hikes and just talking about those things. And it was always, we always had novel insights, and like the conversation always will take you somewhere where you never thought it would go. And we were like, okay, we should open this up and just record some of them and so on, and just do this from time to time. Yeah. And because that's kind of to bring it back to the very beginning, where it's like, okay, at least we know our flaws, and we are really bad at explaining sovereign engineering. We're really bad at kind of, you know, letting people know that this exists. We basically
we're really
have like
bad
five
at,
tweets.
At explaining our thinking around things, including sovereign engineering.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when we have these conversations and we explore a bunch of different ideas, and then we kind of keep it to ourselves.
Never sit down and
write about it.
Or something. Yeah. It's like, that's, you know.
No pointing fingers, but
a little bit of pointing fingers. We're both to blame. And anyway, like maybe, hopefully that's useful. I'll run the whole transcript through an LLM. And that will
and
generate.
Sailor
a new
will come out.
The shining city in cyberspace. That would be so funny. Like I'll rebuild the website and it will just be a shining city in cyberspace. Anyway, it's if you listen to every single No Solutions conversation, you should get an idea.
Yeah, you'll have a very good idea of the vibe.
What engineering is about and what to expect and so on. So there shouldn't be any surprises. But that's also like, you know, who's going to listen to 15 hours of like waves and street sounds and like
and tunnel gonna, talking.
So you really have to want it. But in our defense, we really want to have the people here that really want to be here. So again, if you're interested in Nostar, if you want to try something new, if you want to meet the best people in the space and just, you know, experiment with eCash, Nostar, Lightning stuff, what have you, it's a fantastic place to be. Madeira is beautiful, food is great, weather is like 21 degrees centigrade all year round. It's like fantastic in terms of climate, all those kind of things. It's kids friendly, people brought their families as well. You know, we are here with our families as well. And yeah, that's kind of it.
And I actually said this as a send-off on the very first podcast that you and me recorded together in Francis' place, remember?
Okay, I do remember. Yeah, I do remember.
What I had in mind at that point, and I kind of still think that
that was in Costa Rica.
That was in Costa Rica. Yeah, that was a while ago.
Yeah.
Is that there is a lot of value, and it kind of fits perfect with YOLO mode. There is a lot of value in just making a wild decision that can completely change. It has the opportunity of changing your life, and it's a fucking one decision away.
Oh.
It is literally just making a decision. Then there is a to-do list after that decision. But coming and participating in something like software engineering,
how many people have told you and me it changed their life? Oh, absolutely. Many people quit their job and went full-time.
Full retard.
And you know, they're still alive and can feed themselves, so it works.
I mean, value for value. So they feed themselves.
They sap each other's sandwiches.
But it's literally you listen to a podcast and you say, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. That's what Justin did when he came. And I'm literally going to quote him on the new website. It was like, I'm surprised I'm still here. Justin Moon, week 6. You know, it's like he changed his flight like 3 times or so because he wanted to stay for 1 week and then it became 2 weeks. And he stayed for the whole 6 weeks.
And he's coming back.
So we must do something right. And that's also one thing maybe worth mentioning. Like the first 3 cohorts, we burned ourselves to a crisp because we did everything at all times.
Yes.
And now we got better at delegating, like again, back to slavery and so on. That's going to be the theme of everything. Maybe slavery is going to be the theme of the next cohort. Who knows?
It emerges.
Fuck YOLO mode. It emerges. And every week, like we'll have 6 weeks. We also have 1 week where we won't have fixed programming, so a little bit of a break in between. And every week is going to have a different captain. So those are like veterans, alumni that went through the program, some of them multiple times. And they are going to, you know, make sure that the whole organizational structure works and everyone knows what to do and so on. Because otherwise I just, you know, like I burn out and go insane. But that was a great choice. It worked perfectly the last time. And we're going to do that again.
I think it worked even better.
Yeah. No, it was really, really good because everyone will bring their own perspective and have their own spin on things.
And energy. They really go emphasize different things and so on.
Because, you know, like you know, if I'm out there and standing in front of people, I will just always repeat the same line, which is like Shining City in cyberspace and quote Taylor all the time. And that's also not good.
Start talking about bombs.
So it's better if like Justin or Kelly or Aryan or whoever is out there and just talking about something else than MSTR. Well, yeah, that's about it. I hope that was useful.
Yeah, I have one.
It was useful for me.
So yeah, no, it was nice. I have one more thing that just came to me, is that I think something like this is becoming, like software engineering is becoming increasingly important because we are completely in the age of you can build anything and everything, and what to build becomes all the more important.
Like, why build anything at all? If you can't build absolutely everything, why build anything?
No. Well, yeah, no, not everything. Yeah, you're right. You can build anything.
No, I'm obviously being facetious, but that's where it's trending, and that's kind of the question everyone should ask himself.
Right. Yeah. So that kind of question is what we explore at software engineering. Why build this thing? Why put? Because I think,
how should the future look like in some sense? In your opinion,
how do you want the future to look like?
Exactly.
Work for that.
Exactly.
And build towards that.
Yeah, and build accordingly.
Because I think it's all going to come down to taste and caring. What do you care about?
Absolutely. Yeah. Taste and values. Yeah. Exactly. Caring is actually a great point. That's by the way, to quote Vivekananda again, that's the distinction between humans and LLMs. LLMs don't care about the information they are processing. We do.
Yes.
And it is because we're embodied and blah, blah, blah. But I talked about embodiment the last 5 times we talked, I think so. I'm focusing on the Shining City in cyberspace today. There are no bodies. They're just slaves, the non-embodied slaves. It's going to be glorious. But any last words?
No, I gave like 6 times my last words. I think I'm out of ideas and I'm properly heat stroke.
Fantastic. Now let's drink something. Let's eat something. That was good.
That was good.
All right. One more snap. We can do it.